My life pretty much tanked the night I left home with a 2,000-year-old demon. Wait, tanked isn't the right word. It was more of a slow unraveling, like a thread that comes loose in an old sweater and can never be fixed, no matter how hard you try. All you can do is wait for the dumb hole to get bigger, 1 centimeter at a time. I should have seen the signs, but in my defense, I was distracted. You would have been too if you had spent the last 3 months, 2 days, and 16 hours sleeping in fleabag motels, eating cardboard hamburgers and soggy tater tots, and catching nasty whiffs of Eaton's demon breath. For the record, demons don't brush their fangs, and 2,000 years is a long time to go without Colgate. As if that weren't bad enough, my mom had told me that, regardless of the fact that I was Godborn hunting, I had to do all my distance education homework, which meant hours hunched over my iPad. I had also spent way more time than I wanted to admit looking over my shoulder, expecting Kamasots, Mr. Bat God, to appear out of a trail of black fog so he could rip off my head with his iron claws. I was pretty sure he had dreamed of nothing else since our battle in the junkyard. So yeah, I was ready to go home, back to Isla Olbosch, where everything was sun and sea and safety. I was so close. I felt like I could practically fall over the finish line. Because tonight, Eaton had tracked down the very last Godborn I was trying to find, lucky number 64. The night had started like this. I tumbled headfirst out of a gateway into a dark alley littered with aluminum cans, Chinese food takeout boxes, and a sofa hemorrhaging its stuffing. The air was thick and muggy. "Just this once," I groaned to Eek. "Could you make a gateway that doesn't spin me on extra high and smell like leftover death?" Tonight, the demon had taken the form of an 11-year-old human girl with a gap-toothed smile and braided reddish hair. She wore denim overalls and a shirt patterned with little red hearts, but I knew what lay underneath all that. A green neon sign on the wall above us gave her a sickly glow. If I looked super close, I could see her natural blue pallor underneath the fake human one. Eaton altered her appearance as quickly as someone might change a mask, constantly seeking a disguise that wouldn't make her itch all over, which was never going to happen because she was allergic to human flesh. The best part of her allergy? She couldn't eat humans.
"Death is an acquired smell, Zane," Eek said, scratching her dimpled chin. "Ugh! Human skin is like poison ivy. What a stupid invention."
Skin or poison ivy? And technically, neither is an invention, but I wasn't about to have that combo right then. She growled.
"Both."
Whatever. Nothing was going to put me in a bad mood. If all went as planned, in a couple of hours I would be rid of Itchy Eek and her reeking, churning gateways. I grunted, getting to my feet with the help of Fuego, my cane/spear. I was born with a limp. One leg is shorter than the other, and my cane helps me bolt when I need to, like if I'm about to be sliced open by some bloodthirsty monster. Fuego also conveniently turns into a spear when I have to defend myself against said monster. It was a present from my dad, the Maya god Huracan. "So, where are we?" I asked.
"Hell's Kitchen. Hardly hellish, if you ask me."
Eek gave a hard grunt.
"To be more specific, New York City."
"This is New York?" I stabbed a wedge of discarded styrofoam with my cane, thinking that this dark, seedy alley looked like none of the pictures I'd ever seen of the shining city. Eaton kicked an empty soda can under the sofa with a huff.
"I know. How could a place this nice be Murderer's Row? What a big, fat disappointment."
"At least we won't be here long," I said. Tugging on a braid, Eek said,
"Anything to eat in this place? I'm starving."